From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Hope you had a great weekend. Coming up on this Monday edition, all eyes are on President Trump and his Supreme Court choice. He's scheduled to announce his nominee at 9 p.m. Eastern Time tonight. You can join me live this evening after the announcement on Family Research Council's Facebook page. But first, we'll talk with Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana and get his analysis on the candidates that are on the short list in just a moment. And good news for First Amendment freedoms in Maine. The House of Representatives in Maine sustained Governor LePage's veto on a bill that would have banned certain types of counseling. Carol Conley, Executive Director of the Christian Civic League of Maine, will be here with the latest. Also over the weekend, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was in North Korea seeking details on denuclearization. He also made an unannounced stop in Afghanistan. Retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, FRC's Executive Vice President, will weigh in on that visit. The website, TonyPerkins.com, or if you are on Twitter and you want to keep up with what's happening, at T. Perkins. Okay, in just a few hours, President Trump will announce his second pick for the United States Supreme Court. The president was working through the weekend to arrive at his selection. He was reportedly working from a short list of four candidates. Now, the replacement will be for retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy, and it could impact the court for decades to come. With us now is Congressman Mike Johnson. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee. He is a constitutional law attorney who has devoted his adult life to fighting for the fundamental freedoms and traditional values that have always been a priority for the people of Louisiana and folks all across the nation. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, great to be with you, especially on this day. This is, has been said so many times, the Super Bowl of politics, isn't it? I mean, the excitement is palpable, and it's a big and fateful day for the country.
Well, this was front and center in the last election because of the vacancy from the passing of Justice Scalia, and we've seen the impact that that has had on even some recent court decisions. This could, in many on many cases that the court has taken up, this could shift the balance of the court.
It could. You know, Justice Kennedy was appointed, of course, to the court by a Republican president, and we expected, and everyone in the country expected, that he would act as a conservative and an originalist, a textualist, in his service on the court. But many times in the last few decades, he disappointed those of us who espouse those values. And, you know, I've been an attorney for a little over 20 years, so my entire career has Justice Kennedy's been on the bench. And many times, as you know, in most of the big cases, the landmark cases, certainly on social issues and many of those things, they're almost always decided 5-4, and Kennedy was that necessary swing vote. Sometimes he went against our values and our interests, and that was a great concern and frustration to many of us. So replacing him with a reliable constitutional conservative will indeed be a major shift for the country, and I think one that's long overdue.
You're right in terms of on some issues he was, if you would say, I guess you could say, on the conservative side of the ledger. But when it came to issues of life, of course, he was a swing vote in the redefinition of marriage. And so someone who will abide by the Constitution, someone who will not use the judicial bench as a workbench to work in the shadows of and craft policy that states and Congress won't adopt, that's a big change for the court. And we look at these four potential candidates that are on the short list. And I think the president's always got a surprise in his pocket. So I would not be surprised if he
right.
if there was someone else besides this short list. But Kavanaugh is one that is on the list. Kethledge, Barrett, and Hardiman are the four that are on the list. Some, I think they're all good. Some more conservative than others. What's your take on the short list and the impact that they could have on the court?
Look, I agree with you, your overall assessment, Tony. I think any of these top four, the names being floated, would be an exceptional pick. But I have my personal preference, and the one I personally favor is Amy Coney Barrett. And that's because I know her the best. I know what she's about. I've actually known her since high school. She hails from Louisiana, as you know, and we met in the student council years back when we were in high school. And I have always known her to be a brilliant and conscientious conservative. I mean, it's a lifelong commitment of hers. She's principled, she's an originalist, and she's young. And you know, from the political standpoint, what we really like about Judge Barrett is that she was just confirmed late last year to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. And she secured the support, of course, when she went through that ringer of not only all the Republicans, but three key Democrats, including Tim Kaine and Joe Manchin and Joe Donnelly. And, of course, Manchin and Donnelly are both on the ballot this November. They hail from states that President Trump won pretty handily, and there would be an extreme amount of pressure on them to be consistent with their previous vote that just happened just a number of months ago. So, you know, for all those reasons, the idea that she's a female, another woman appointment to the court who is a true conservative, I think she sends a chill down the spine to the radical left. And that's one of the reasons I like her the most.
Yeah, I agree. And I've said as much. I think, you know, she's a mother of seven, two adopted children. I think that she is the left's worst nightmare because she does not fit the mold of the feminist on the left. And, you know, and one of the reasons I think the president may be leaning in that type of direction is because people say, oh, she's too much of a fight. This is a president who just kind of dispenses and forgets, you know, the traditional political, you know, wisdom, if you call it, even call it that. And he goes with his instincts, and he doesn't run from a fight. Rather, he runs to a fight. And I think that's in a, you know, some are saying, Mike, that in a closely divided Senate, you know, 50-49, that you've got to have somebody who's in the middle of the road. I think this president has shown that you don't win in the middle of the road. You win by clearly defined principles, clearly defined priorities, and in this case, a clearly defined candidate.
That's right. And ultimately, what this is about, unlike any other political question, this is about who will faithfully interpret the Constitution. That's the way our system is set up. That's what the founders that's how they designed this. That's what our system anticipates. And in so many cases in recent decades, we haven't had that. We've had activist judges, as we all, you know, we like to use the phrase, because it's the easiest way to describe what you said earlier, that some people go to the federal courts and they seek to advance policy from the bench. That's not the way our system was designed. Policy is supposed to be advanced by the legislative branch, by the Congress, and then it's supposed to, the Constitution is supposed to be interpreted and applied by the courts. You know, Judge Barrett, Amy Coney Barrett, she clerked for Justice Scalia, and he was the one that famously said, you know, it feels like many times we're here inventing a Constitution instead of applying it, and that's been the real problem. So by making this bold choice, I think the president is going to draw a line in the sand. He's going to say that we should have a true originalist, a textualist, somebody who will interpret the Constitution for how it's written. It means what it says what it means. We can't invent things and add things into it just because it assuages our modern sensibilities, you know. On the other end of the spectrum, you have somebody like Justice Ginsburg, who, you know, famously has looked to international law and said that's how we should interpret the U.S. Constitution. It's rubbish. And so Amy Coney Barrett is someone who would stand in the face of that and say, no, we have to get back to the original intent. And that's something the country needs. I think the president is spoiling for a fight, but I think this is a noble fight and one that we really need to have.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, talking about the president's pending announcement of his second pick for the United States Supreme Court. My guest, Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson, represents the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana. Mike, things are, I know you've been in practicing law, First Amendment focus for the last 20 years, and I've been in politics about that long, a little bit longer. things have changed a lot. We've become a very polarized nation, and I would actually argue that the court has fueled that polarization with its overreach in enforcing policies like Roe v. Wade on the nation and Obergefell. But the people, and polling shows this, people understand the importance of the court and its reach into their lives. And so this is not just about getting 50 senators to go one way or the other. The American people are engaged in this. And this is why I think that a pick like Barrett or Hardiman or somebody like that, who really people can identify with and connect with, I think will bring them to this process, which I think is, in today's day and age and the way politics work, is going to be a deciding factor.
I think it will, and I do think that it will engage the public. I think this is going to tee up for us, Tony, a really important moment for the country, and that we will have front and center some true philosophical debates about core principles. You know, Roe v. Wade will obviously be a big part of the discussion, but even more than that, the role of government, the scope of government, you know, how much government should be influencing our lives in so many of these areas. And many of these core issues have not had a rigorous debate in the public square. You know, there are talking heads on both sides, and there's media, there's lots of vitriol, but we haven't gotten down to the substance of what the real arguments are. And I think over the next few weeks and months, we're going to have an opportunity to do that. It's a real teachable moment for those of us who do have these core philosophical principles to be able to speak, particularly to younger people, younger Americans, who really haven't had that front and center for a while, because you're going to hear that. And any of these candidates, as we've said, would be good. But, you know, somebody like Judge Barrett, I keep going back to, because I think she would be a great way to focus that debate. Because she is female, you know, you're going to see the true colors of the radical left in this country. They would have to come out and oppose it for some very nefarious reasons, and I think they'll be exposed for really what their arguments are.
And to that point, you know, my friend, he's a friend, Mitch McConnell in the Senate. I have a lot of respect for him. He's gotten more appellate court judges working with his administration approved than any other administration in history. So I say this with respect. But he has, you know, said, well, we need a candidate that, you know, is more acceptable. Don't pick an extreme candidate, one that's going to elicit strong opposition. I don't think the president could pick a candidate who would not, a constitutionalist, that is, one who abides by the letter of the Constitution. I don't think he could pick one that would not inflame the left.
No, that's right. And isn't that the great irony of it? The idea that someone who is an originalist, a constitutionalist, would be viewed as an extreme pick. I mean, that highlights where we are and where we've come as a country. And that's why this is so important. And this will be a shift in the court. It will be a great day of discussion and debate in the country. And it will, I think, at the end of the day, be a very healthy one for the country and for our principles. This is the Super Bowl in every respect because we really have an unprecedented opportunity here.
And you know, my view, Mike, if there's going to be a fight, let's make it a good one. Mike Johnson from the state of Louisiana. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll be talking soon. All right, coming up next, state lawmakers in Maine have supported the governor's veto of a bill that would have banned certain types of counseling. Carol Conley, executive director of Christian Civic League of Maine, is here when we return. Don't go away.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide. Should state law require pregnancy resource centers to provide free advertising for the abortion industry? Congressman Andy Harris has spent his life serving his neighbors, country, and community, and has become one of the foremost advocates in Congress who has stood with these pregnancy resource centers as the Supreme Court determines whether the state can force individuals or private entities to act in contradiction to their beliefs. In 2017, the U.S. witnessed its lowest abortion rate since 1975, proving that these pro-life pregnancy centers have had a positive impact despite radical pro-abortion activists trying to violate First Amendment rights. Don't miss Representative Harris's discussion of the ongoing fight to protect the sanctity of life, as well as the First Amendment rights of those standing for the pro-life cause. Visit frc.org/lectures to view this important event.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Let me remind you, tonight, President will be making his announcement about his pick for the Supreme Court. Second pick the President has had the opportunity to make. We'll be talking about it live on Facebook, Family Research Council's Facebook page this evening. Tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern is when the president is supposed to make his announcement, so sometime after that. All right, Governor Paul LePage vetoed a bill Friday that would have prohibited state-licensed counselors and therapists from engaging in sexual orientation change efforts at the request of clients if the clients were under the age of 18. They were minors. Well, today, and this is, by the way, there's about 13 states that have gone down this path, and Governor LePage, the first governor to veto one of these, and earlier today, the governor's veto was sustained when the House failed to override his veto. With us now is Carol Connolly. He's executive director of Christian Civic League of Maine. Carol, you have been advising the governor on these matters, and members of the legislature. What's the feedback you're getting from the legislature today?
Well, Tony, the sun is shining in Maine. I'll tell you, this is a great day. Something we've been battling. We knew since the last legislative session we'd be dealing with this. And as you mentioned, we just appreciate the courage of Governor LePage to frankly point out the hypocrisy in our legislature when they failed to do away with a law, FGM in our state, female genital mutilation, to outlaw that, and then to turn around and to allow a law that would make simply talking about it illegal in regard to sexual orientation and gender confusion. So it's the feedback I'm getting is that, you know, there certainly were very strong influences from the media and from the medical associations, but within our House and members of our Senate, they weren't falling for it. They felt that this was absolutely against parental rights. It was against the First Amendment. It was against, you know, the freedom of speech, and they just didn't fall for the emotional tactics, and we are just so thankful for the leadership of Governor LePage and other leaders that stood up against, you know, the tidal wave that other states have succumbed to this process.
I know we've been, Carol, we've been talking about what's happening in California. This not too different than the bill. Of course, the California bill is even more sweeping than this, prohibiting the counseling for everyone, regardless of age. I know that you had over 270 pastors and denominational leaders that were pushing back against the left's effort to essentially trample the First Amendment. And that's not I mean, they're starting to understand what the agenda is of the left on this and the threat it is to the freedom of speech and the freedom of religion. But tell us a little bit about the president of the Senate and other Republican leadership, members of the leadership of the Republican Party. Where did they fall on this?
I think it would surprise people, Tony, and of course you know that, about this because your relationship with our former chair, Bob Emmerich, that a lot of people think Maine's a Northeast state and therefore it's like as blue as can be, but we're really a divided state. We have the northern part of the state that, as you know, gave the electoral vote to Mr. Trump. And then the bottom part of the state is very, very progressive. But we are, you know, really fortunate in this state to have leadership. Mike Thibodeau is the president of our Senate, and he's a deacon of the Baptist Church in Winterport, Maine, a wonderful Christian guy. Garrett Mason is the majority leader in the Senate, graduated from Pensacola Christian College. In our House, the whip, the Senate minority assistant leader, her husband is a Missionary Alliance pastor, and the minority leader in the House is a very strong pro-life Catholic. So, you know, I think it surprises people. They think this is a wasteland of liberalism, but we really have a great influence by the church and parts of our state, and we certainly, as you mentioned, had nearly unanimous and very unified opposition within the evangelical community and the conservative Catholics. The diocese came out very strong against this, so the faith community had a lot to do with this defeat.
You are absolutely correct when people when you say people would be surprised, because I was surprised when I first went to Maine, and actually I've been to Maine many, many times now. And it reminds me actually a lot of Louisiana. In fact, there's some connections there I won't go into. But the lot of rural area there, a lot of those involved in fishing and in various industries that are there. But unfortunately, it's the big cities like Portland that tends to drive the politics of the state and clearly pick your state senators who are, I would say, do not represent the vast majority of those in the state of Maine. But because of the work of the churches, you mentioned Bob Emmerich, who we've been working with for a number of years, the churches organizing and having a voice results in this protection of the First Amendment. So this didn't just happen. It happened because you had a governor who was backed by churches and church leaders, and they remained involved in the process.
You're absolutely right, Tony. And you refer to Bob. Someone asked me this, you know, how could this happen? It happened because in 2009, our state legislature jumped the gun ahead of the people and tried to redefine marriage. And Bob Emmerich and Tim Russell and a bunch of guys went all over our state, and the pastors got involved and said, no, you've gone too far. And that following election cycle is when Paul LePage, and then in the Senate and the House, 40 to 50 conservative evangelicals and Catholics came in and started a core of people that said, this is enough. We've got to stop this. And so now, 8 years later, we're seeing the fruits of that labor of those the church people, the church leaders standing up and making sure their voice is heard.
And Carol, of course, you're a part of that process as well. I know we're very good at at jumping on people when they do the wrong thing, but is this not a time to applaud the governor and the Republican leadership for doing the right thing, those that supported the governor?
Absolutely, and we're going to afford the citizens of Maine many opportunities to do that, because you know they're going to take the slings and arrows for a very tough vote. And so, and we had some Democrats, we want people to know, that joined us as well. It was bipartisan, so we'll certainly be making sure they get
all right. We're going to direct citizens your way to do that. Carol Connolly, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, don't go away. When we come back, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin joins us to talk about the Secretary of State's trip to North Korea. That's next.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide. Should state law require pregnancy resource centers to provide free advertising for the abortion industry? Congressman Andy Harris has spent his life serving his neighbors, country, and community, and has become one of the foremost advocates in Congress who has stood with these pregnancy resource centers as the Supreme Court determines whether the state can force individuals or private entities to act in contradiction to their beliefs. In 2017, the U.S. witnessed its lowest abortion rate since 1975, proving that these pro-life pregnancy centers have had a positive impact despite radical pro-abortion activists trying to violate First Amendment rights. Don't miss Representative Harris's discussion of the ongoing fight to protect the sanctity of life, as well as the First Amendment rights of those standing for the pro-life cause. Visit frc.org/lectures to view this important event.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. Let me remind you tonight, after the president's announcement of his Supreme Court selection, his nominee, we will be talking about that on Facebook, Family Research Council Facebook page, so you want to tune in for that live after the president's announcement. All right, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is brushing aside North Korea's accusations of gangster-like demands, vowing that sanctions will remain until the leader, Kim Jong-un, his pledge to get rid of nuclear weapons is met. Joining us now is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He was the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence during the President George W. Bush administration. He spent 13 years in the Delta Force, and he now serves as the Family Research Council's Executive Vice President, probably your most dangerous mission.
That is true in many ways.
All right. So, General, you know, Mike Pompeo is now, I mean, he's racking up some frequent flyer miles to North Korea. What's happening there? I mean, we saw the president when he met with Kim Jong-un. It looked like things were coming together. Is that deal falling apart?
Well, I think it's too early to tell, Tony, to be honest with you. My general assessment is no, the deal is not falling apart. But anybody that says they figured this all out, as the Apostle Paul said, the truth is not in them. I think that there's two distinct possibilities. One is that the Chinese are asserting themselves here in reaction to Trump's trade policy. And the other one is that Kim does not have total control over his military. And now that sounds bizarre, but think about it for a minute. The Chinese and the North Korean militaries think very much alike, and it is it's a known fact that China has not really had their military under control for a long, long time. I think the same may be the case with Kim Jong-un. That doesn't mean that he's not still in a position to call the shots with his military, but they may be doing things behind his back. Remember, Saddam Hussein's military, which he was so proud of, they convinced him that he had a nuclear program, which, in fact, he really didn't have. And so I think you may have some of that here. I don't think the deal is over with. I don't think it's time to throw in the towel yet. But if Kim is playing a game, it's a dangerous game.
For him, it's an extremely dangerous game, because I tend to think that your take on this is accurate. I think China is trying to flex its muscle over there, because I think Kim Jong-un is I think he came away from that meeting with Trump realizing that Trump's a different type of leader. And I don't think anybody wants to see if Trump is bluffing on a matter such as this.
Well, that's a good point, Tony, because keep in mind that none of the statements that have come out of North Korea have been made by Kim Jong-un. So what you have is you have a situation where Kim Jong-un could do exactly what Donald Trump has done on numerous occasions, which is come out with something that counters his own Secretary of State or his own defense minister.
True.
Kim could come out and make a statement saying, no, my people misspoke. But he's playing this right now. I think he's letting it run right now to see where it's going to go and what the reactions are going to be. But again, you also have to at least put some credibility in what Mike Pompeo says. Pompeo says they made progress. Pompeo says that that they were actually able to talk about some substantive things that went well, and some other things that didn't go as well.
And we know him well.
That's right.
We know Secretary Pompeo, and we know that he's a straight shooter, and that he is serious about what he is doing. I think it's going to be very interesting how this plays out. But I would say this: I think Donald Trump is not going to allow this thing to just fade away. He is either going to bring about an agreement and make sure it's adhered to, or he'll make sure that the problem of nuclearization in North Korea is resolved.
There's no question about that. He's got too much into this already. His whole presidency is at stake now over this.
Yeah, I agree.
Because he staked everything on that meeting with Kim. He is not going to let this turn into a disaster.
And I don't think his red lines are drawn with dry erasers, dry markers.
No, we've seen that previously, but no, I think that he's going to slap Kim with the most severe sanctions that have ever been imposed on anybody. He's already said he's got about 300 more sanctions to impose, and I think if he discovers or determines that Kim is not being honest with him, that Kim is playing games with him, trying to provoke him to see how far he can go, I think he'll slap those sanctions on him. Look, they didn't even have the money to get their own airplane to fly to Singapore. His economy is in shambles. This can't go on. More sanctions will cripple his economy.
Well, we're going to watch that very closely, and that music means we're out of time. But I want you to stick around, if you will, and go to the other side of the break, because I want to ask you about the pending meeting between President Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
That's coming up. Putin kind of in a weakened position because of his plans in Syria not going as planned. So we're going to talk about that. And folks are going to be taking your phone calls here on Washington Watch. Let me remind you, tonight, after the president's announcement at 9 p.m. Eastern time, we'll be giving you our take live on Facebook. So don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch. The general is here. And then I'm going to introduce you to my special co-host that's with me today. So don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Should state law require pregnancy resource centers to provide free advertising for the abortion industry? Congressman Andy Harris has spent his life serving his neighbors, country, and community, and has become one of the foremost advocates in Congress who has stood with these pregnancy resource centers as the Supreme Court determines whether the state can force individuals or private entities to act in contradiction to their beliefs. In 2017, the U.S. witnessed its lowest abortion rate since 1975, proving that these pro-life pregnancy centers have had a positive impact despite radical pro-abortion activists trying to violate First Amendment rights. Don't miss Representative Harris's discussion of the ongoing fight to protect the sanctity of life, as well as the First Amendment rights of those standing for the pro-life cause. Visit frc.org/lectures to view this important event.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted. But millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Just a moment, we're going to go to the phone lines, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. But first, I've got a special co-host that's been with me today. You haven't heard him, so he's just kind of sitting in here with me. Samuel Adam Perkins, my youngest son, is joining me today in studio. You want to say hi, Samuel? No, he's just waving. All right, General. He's just waving. He's not going to talk.
Big help you are, bud.
Yeah. It's not like he's not like that at home. He's always talking at home. Anyway, General Boykin, my guest, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council. We were discussing the Secretary of State's visit to North Korea over the weekend. But I want to transition now to the President's pending meeting with Vladimir Putin from Russia.
Yeah.
How significant of a meeting is this?
Well, I think it's a very significant meeting. Now, you know, I don't think we should have real high expectations in terms of, so, you know, specific things that will be accomplished. But I think it's a very, very good start. And I think that, you know, Putin is probably going to want to talk about sanctions. And Donald Trump is probably going to want to talk about Syria.
Right.
So each of them has their own agenda, and I think that they will push what matters to them and to their countries. And obviously the sanctions are hurting Russia. They won't admit it, but I guarantee you he'll bring it up. And Trump, I think, is very concerned about the whole Syria situation as it impacts on Israel,
right,
which he has already shown that he is a strong supporter of Israel. And the future there could be very, very dangerous for Israel.
It could be, with Russia working with the Syrian army, kind of advancing, moving closer to the border with Israel and Jordan,
and the Iranians.
Right, it's the Iranians that are there doing this, which is a real threat to Israel. Now, As I understand, Putin had, I think, as he launched this latest initiative or gave the green light to it, was hoping that he would have mission would have been accomplished in Syria, but they've run into strong resistance.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. They have failed basically.
And who is the opposition just that they're faced with? Who's holding them back?
Well, there are a combination or a coalition of different Muslim groups in there that are fighting against the Russians, that have been fighting against the Russians for quite some time. Now, don't think that they're Jeffersonian Democrats by any means. They're not. But they're also fighting against the Russians because the Russians are propping up Bashar al-Assad and supporting their enemies, which are the Shias from Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And these groups are all Sunni Muslim groups.
Is there a good outcome in Syria?
There is no good outcome to the situation in Syria. You get rid of Bashar al-Assad and you bring in these Muslim groups that have already shown their proclivity to want to destroy Israel and their proclivity to kill Christians. So you keep Bashar al-Assad and you got another evil despot that kills his own people. So there is no good outcome here. But one is worse than the other, I guess.
So how does Russia make its way out of Syria?
Well, I think that it's going to be very difficult for them to extract themselves because the first thing they have to do is make the decision that they are going to give up their naval base there if they pull out. Because somebody, you know, some of these other groups will go in and occupy that mm-hmm. just to make sure the Russians can't use it. So they got to be willing to give that up. I don't see them being willing to give it up because it's the only naval port they have in the Mediterranean. And if they are able to follow through with what they have in terms of a long-term goal, they want to cut a pipeline from Iran across
right.
Iraq and Syria mm-hmm. out to the Mediterranean to where they can supply gas and oil to Europe. And once they do that, once they get the Europeans dependent upon gas and oil from Russia, that fractures NATO, and there's just no telling where that scenario could go.
So do we then move to more of just a containment policy? Is that where the United States pursues?
Well, first of all, we've humiliated them in Syria. You stop and think about the fact that we fired 59 Tomahawk missiles onto an air base where there were about 100 Russians stationed there. We fired those missiles onto that air base with the Russians right there. Now, none of the Russians were hurt. So we've poked them in the eye already. So what do we do? I think we just continue doing what we've been doing. I think with John Bolton as the National Security Advisor now, I think we just continue doing what we've been doing, and that is keep the pressure on Russia and see if they ultimately make the mistake to go ahead and get out. If they start taking casualties, that's you can bet that they're going to relook it. And I'm not saying that we should be trying to kill Russians, but I'm saying in supporting these other right. groups that are fighting against them.
That's the same
that's
thing.
That's why they left Afghanistan.
I was going to say, that's the same thing that happened in Afghanistan.
That's right.
When the body bags started coming home, the support just diminished.
Yep.
And
exactly.
They had to pull out.
You couldn't explain why.
Yeah.
And
they
had to pull out. Now, I think you've got the potential for the same thing in northeastern Ukraine. When you start sending home dead Russians and you can't explain why, when you have your public statement is that you're not providing military people there, which they are and they have been, but they're fighting under, out of uniform, if you will. So I think the Russians have got a tiger by the tail in Syria right now. And what we ought to be looking to do is get the Russians to use their influence to reduce the Iranian presence there because that's more dangerous than the Russian presence.
Yeah, absolutely, especially to Israel.
To Israel, yeah.
General Jerry Boykin, as always, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be with you.
All right.
Say hello, Sam.
He's still waving. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Going to take your phone calls here in the final 10 minutes of the program. A lot happening. I mean, obviously, we're anticipating this selection for the Supreme Court. We can talk about that. But the president managing so many things and you know, working closely with folks in the White House, the president's advisors and his team, it's amazing that they're able to keep up with just the volume of things in such a fluid world in which we live, where there are so many threats and dangers. And it's a reminder, folks, to regardless of who is occupying the White House, the Oval Office, to be praying for God's wisdom for our leaders so that they would make the right choices. Whether we agree with them, whether they're in our political party or that we like them, it's still good to pray for them. And I did this for the previous occupant of the Oval Office. I did not agree with his policies at all, but I prayed for him on a regular basis that he would have wisdom that went beyond his own ability to make the decisions that were beneficial to our nation, that we might live peaceably here. All right, some more good news out of South Carolina. Another governor taking action. Governor Henry McMaster, who actually was the lieutenant governor, and when Nikki Haley became U.S. ambassador to the U.N., he stepped up, as governor. He just exercised his executive power and ended the forced partnership between taxpayers in the state of South Carolina and Planned Parenthood, zeroing out about $15 million, almost $16 million of the South Carolina budget. He said not a cent of the state money would find its way to America's biggest abortion business. So we commend South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster for joining the ranks of other governors who were saying, you know what, this administration gave us the ability to do it, and so we're going to do it. We're going to defund Planned Parenthood. I'm hoping that we'll see Congress eventually get to that same position where they will sever the funding stream that goes into the pockets, into the treasury of the nation's largest abortion provider, Planned Parenthood. And this is that forced partnership. Taxpayers don't have a voice in this matter. We are forced to fork over a $500 million a year to Planned Parenthood. We came so close last year in the reconciliation bill, but John McCain was the one vote that caused that to fail. And we're encouraging, and I would encourage you as well, a lot of things on your to-do list, but one of the items is to keep the pressure on your senators and your congressmen to defund Planned Parenthood. It can happen. Now, there is another effort. We talked a few weeks ago with former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, another bite at the apple in terms of doing away with Obamacare, the repeal and replace, whatever you want to call it. It would shift it to the states, but in that process, it would defund Planned Parenthood. And it would require all of the funding for the, you know, what is now Obamacare, as it goes to the states in the form of block grants, it would go through the CHIP program, which is the child health program, and that is all Hyde protected, meaning no money can be used to fund abortions. So that effort's still alive. Now, it's not top on the to-do list of Senator McConnell, the Senate leader, and I understand that. They're trying to get judges through, and now, of course, with this vacancy of the Supreme Court, this is going to consume a lot of the oxygen in the Senate over the next 2 months leading into the election. But we should not pull back on this at all. We need to keep pressing forward on this effort to defund Planned Parenthood. And in fact, you encourage your state leaders to do the same. For those states that have not yet done so, you know, put this on your put this on their to-do list. Most states are out of session. Those that are not in year-round, most have wrapped up their legislative sessions for the year. But now's a good time to reach out to them and start the effort to encourage them to do it in the coming year. By the way, speaking of reaching out to legislators, and we had Carol Connolly on earlier from Maine. If you live in Maine, and I know we've got stations in Maine, let me encourage you to reach out to the governor and thank the governor for vetoing this ban on certain forms of counseling, voluntary counseling, people who simply wanted to get help for same-sex attractions or other issues related to bisexuality, transsexualism, whatever. They would be banned, meaning they cannot have the help that they want. It's hard to imagine that we have come to this point in the country where we can't even have conversations about these things for people to seek help. But this shows you the intolerance of the left. And it's like it's a trap. They want to lock people in, and they focus primarily, California being the one exception, making a blanket ban, no matter your age or anything. Most of the states have focused on the young people, denying parents even the right to take their children to get counseling. And even if the child is in agreement, saying, yes, I'm having these issues and I would like help, we've got about a little over a dozen states that have said, this counseling cannot be provided. You cannot talk about this. I want that to sink in. I mean, this is what we see in totalitarian countries, you know, communist countries that, or, you know, countries that don't allow people. I mean, it's very similar to these anti-conversion laws that we see in many countries where people cannot change their religion. They're denied the right if they're, in most cases, it's, I mean, we see this in India. Some of the Hindu countries, Muslim countries, you can't change. They have what they call anti-conversion laws. You can make the connection. I mean, the same intolerance, this fear of people being able to make up their own minds, the fear of people having the truth. Because why? Because the truth will set you free. Now, I know that inflames some people. That makes them angry. But the truth, if you will face it and then embrace it, will set you free. Spiritually, sexually, politically, it's a powerful thing. You don't need to be afraid of the truth. You should embrace the truth and the essence of the truth, the core of the truth. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. No reason to fear truth. All right, folks, out of time. Again, you can join us this evening after the president's announcement on Facebook, Family Research Council's Facebook page. Until next time, I leave you with encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, you got it. Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.